Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're embarking on a pretty incredible journey, a deep dive into the very blueprint of what makes us us, the human body, our mission, to really distill the most essential insights and honestly some surprising facts from Dr. Hoffman's lectures on anatomy and physiology.
Yeah.
Think of this as your shortcut, kind of, to truly understanding how you work from the inside out without getting totally bogged down.
It's definitely a foundational exploration. And, you know, Dr. Hoffman's material is brilliant for unlocking a richer, almost profound understanding of ourselves.
Right.
What really comes through from his work is the sheer ingenuity and like the interconnectedness of the human form and its amazing functions.
It sounds like discovering this incredibly complex yet perfectly optimized machine.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Dr. Hoffman starts right at the beginning, laying down the bedrock. What exactly are anatomy and physiology, and what's the fundamental distinction he really wants us to grasp?
Okay, yeah, he's very clear on this. Anatomy is the study of the body's structure, its shape, its parts, how they all relate. That's the form.
The what?
Exactly, the what. Then physiology is the study of function, how those structures actually, you know, perform their jobs. That's the how.
Okay, form and function.
But here's the really crucial insight he emphasizes. Form fits function. And this isn't just like a happy accident. It's a powerful principle. It comes from natural selection, from evolution.
Ah, okay. So the shape of something helps it do its job better, basically.
Precisely. Think about why a bird's bones are hollow for flight.
Right. Well, later.
Or why your stomach has that specific J shape. It's designed perfectly for holding and beginning digestion. It's this constant theme running through everything.
So understanding the what and the how and why they fit together, that's key.
Absolutely.
Then Dr. Hoffman guides us through different levels of looking at the body. It's almost like peeling back layers, isn't it? From the really big stuff down to the incredibly small. We start with gross anatomy.
That's right. Gross anatomy, or macroscopic anatomy, deals with the big, visible structures, things you can actually see with your naked eye, like your heart or your liver or the intestines.
Okay, the obvious parts.
Then we zoom way into microscopic anatomy. This looks at the fine details, things like tissues or individual cells that are, you know, totally invisible without a microscope.
And he goes even deeper, highlighting cellular anatomy. So the structure of just one single cell and its little internal bits, the organelles, this really feels like getting down to the absolute core of what life actually is.
It absolutely does. And he stresses this. The cell is the functional unit of life. Every living thing, by definition, has to have at least one cell.
Right.
But here's where Dr. Hoffman drops a fact that's genuinely mind-bending. It really reshapes how you think about, well, yourself.
Oh, go on.
So, okay, humans are multicellular. We're made of maybe 10 to 100 trillion of our own cells. That's a huge number.
Astronomical.
But for every single one of our cells, Dr. Hoffman reveals there are between 10 and 100 bacteria living in us and on us.
Wait, 10 to 100 times more bacteria than our own cells?
Yeah. So as he puts it, what you call your body is mostly bacteria.
Wow. Okay, that changes things. That's wild.
Doesn't it? And it leads into why viruses, for instance, aren't considered living.
Because they don't have cells.
Exactly. No cells, and critically, they lack metabolism. Now, metabolism sounds a bit technical, maybe.
Yeah, like diet stuff.
Right. But Dr. Hoffman defines it beautifully. It's the sum total of all the chemical reactions, quadrillions of them, happening inside an organism at any given moment.
Quadrillions.
Quadrillions. He equates metabolism directly with life itself. Without all these intricate chemical reactions, life just couldn't happen.
Okay.
He uses this fantastic analogy. He describes a cell as a tiny test tube. It's this contained, sequestered environment that's essential for all that life chemistry to happen without, you know, interference from the outside world.
That tiny test tube analogy. Uh-huh. Yeah, that clicks. It makes sense why you need that protected space.
Definitely.
And he gives a concrete example of this, right? The cellular physiology, the chemistry inside. He talks about pepsinogen becoming pepsin.
Yes, that's a perfect example. So you have this inactive protein called pepsinogen in your stomach.
Okay.
And it needs to be activated to become pepsin, which is the enzyme that actually breaks down proteins in your food. The key activator is hydrochloric acid, HCl.
The stomach acid.
Right. It's in your gastric juice. And this HCl does two crucial things. It flips pepsinogen into active pepsin, and it kills most of the bacteria we swallow with our food. It's a protective measure, too.
Ah, so it's defense and digestion working together through chemistry.
Exactly. A perfect illustration of how the chemistry inside those tiny test tubes works for our survival.
Okay, so from these fundamental bits, the cells and chemistry, Dr. Hoffman then builds up. He introduces the hierarchy of biological organization. You mentioned nested dolls.
Yeah, he likens it to Russian nested dolls. Each level builds upon and contains the one below it. It's a way to structure the complexity.
And what's the big idea behind this nested structure?
It's this concept called emergent properties. He explains that at each step up in organization, totally new properties kind of emerge. Properties that just weren't there at the simpler level below.
Good. Light.
Think about water, HO. It's made of hydrogen and oxygen atoms. Now, hydrogen atoms alone aren't watery. Oxygen atoms aren't watery. But you put them together in the right way.
And you get wetness, flow, surface tension.
Exactly. Those are emergent properties of water molecules. And this same principle applies all the way up the biological ladder, building complexity from simpler parts.
Got it. So let's walk through the levels he outlines. It starts really small, at the chemical level.
Right. Atoms and molecules, the absolute basic building blocks, tiny stuff.
Then these form the cellular level, which we said is the unit of life. And for us humans, we start as just one cell, right? A zygote.
That's right. A single fertilized egg. And then that one cell divides and divides and undergoes this incredible process called differentiation, where cells become specialized. You get kidney cells, liver cells, nerve cells.
Yeah.
All originating from that one starting cell.
Amazing. And these specialized cells then group together. That's the tissue level.
Correct. Collections of similar specialized cells working together form tissues. And here's something that surprises people. Dr. Hoffman states, humans have only four main types of tissue.
Only four? Really? That seems too simple.
It does, but it's incredibly efficient. You've got epithelial tissue. This forms layers, covers surfaces, lines, cavities. Think skin or the lining of your gut.
Okay. Protection, secretion.
Then nervous tissue, which makes up your brain, spinal cord, nerves, communication central.
Got it.
Third is muscular tissue, obviously for movement.
That makes sense.
And fourth is connective tissue. He kind of calls this the everything else category.
Yeah.
It's the most diverse, includes things like blood, bone, cartilage, fat, supports, connects, binds everything together.
Blood and bone are connective tissue. Okay, that's broad.
It really is. So those four tissue types then organize to form the organ level. An organ is a structure made of different tissues working together for a specific function, like your heart, lungs, skin, eyes.
Okay, recognizable parts.
And then multiple organs that cooperate for a common purpose make up an organ system level, like a digestive system or the nervous system. Dr. Hoffman focuses on the 11 human organ systems.
11 systems, that ties it all together.
Pretty much. And when you put all 11 of those organ systems together, functioning in harmony, well, you arrive at the organism level. For this course, that's one complete individual human.
Wow. Okay, that hierarchy really builds the picture. Now, this is where it gets really interesting, I think. Dr. Hoffman takes us on a quick tour of those 11 human organ systems. He says they're all vital for us to survive, except for one.
That's the one. Let's run through them. First, the integumentary system. That's your skin, hair, nails.
Looks and protect.
Yes, but more than just looks. It's a crucial barrier against germs, stops us from drying out desiccation. And it's huge for regulating body temperature, you know, flushing blood to the skin to cool off, sweating for evaporative cooling.
Right. Okay, number two, skeletal system. Bones, cartilage, ligaments.
Provides our internal framework, our endoskeleton. Muscles need bones to pull on to create movement. Remember, he stresses muscles only pull, they never push.
Ah, good point.
And critically, the skeleton is our own calcium storage depot. Calcium is absolutely essential for your nerves and muscles to work properly. Your brain needs it.
Didn't realize it was that critical. Okay, number three, muscular system. And he made a clarification here.
Yes, very important. This system, technically, only includes skeletal muscle, the ones attached to bones and their tendons. Cardiac muscle, the heart muscle.
Belongs to the circulatory system.
Well, it's part of the heart organ, which is central to the circulatory system, yes. And smooth muscle, found in like your gut or blood vessels, belongs to those respective organs and systems.
Got it. So skeletal muscle only for the muscular system.
Right. And besides movement, skeletal muscles help keep us warm through shivering. That's just uncoordinated contractions generating heat.
Okay. Number four, nervous system. Brain, spinal cord, nerves. the control center.
He literally says the brain is our existence. It defines who we are. It's one of the two main control systems, using super-fast electrochemical signals sent along nerve cells, neurons. Think of it like the body's high-speed internet.
And the other control system, number 5, endocrine system.
Yes, this is the system of glands that produce hormones. It's the body's other control system, but it works differently. It uses chemical messengers, hormones sent via the bloodstream. It's generally slower acting, but the effects can last longer.
So like broadcasting a message instead of sending a direct wire.
Exactly. And only cells with the right receptor for a specific hormone will respond. It's like having the right key for a lock. And get this. The nervous and endocrine systems control the other 9 systems, and they control each other. It's constant interplay.
Wow. Okay, number 6. Circulatory system. And Dr. Hoffman had a strong opinion on the name here.
He did. He insists, do not call it the cardiovascular system, because cardio is heart, vascular is vessels. That leaves out the blood. The complete organ system, including the blood, is the circulatory system.
Okay, circulatory it is. And its main job?
Transport. Mm-hmm. Oxygen, carbon dioxide, nutrients from your food, waste products, toxins that need dealing with, heat. It moves everything around our relatively large, thick bodies. The heart's the pump driving it all.
Makes sense. Number 7, lymphatic system. The forgotten system, he called it.
Often overlooked, yeah. But it has 2 critical functions. First, it collects fluid called lymph that constantly leaks out of tiny blood vessels. If it didn't, we'd swell up like balloons. So lymphatic vessels return this fluid back to the bloodstream.
Ah, prevents edema.
Right. Second, it's a major player in immunity. And here's another key point from Dr. Hoffman. There isn't really a separate immune system as an organ system. Immunity is a function carried out by parts of many systems, but the lymphatic system handles a big chunk of it. Think lymph nodes, spleen.
Interesting. Okay. Number 8, respiratory system, lungs and the plumbing.
Primarily, yes. Though he suggests ventilatory system might be more accurate for what the lungs do, which is move air in and out. He points out that true respiration happens inside your cells.
Okay, so why do we ventilate? Why bring in oxygen?
Because oxygen acts like the final receiver, the magnet, for hydrogens, electrons, and protons that get stripped off our food molecules when we break them down for energy. Oxygen grabs them, forming water. It allows us to fully dismantle the fuel.
And the waste product is?
Carbon dioxide. That's what's left after you completely take apart your food molecules for energy. So we breathe it out.
Got it. Number 9, digestive system. The tube from mouth to anus, plus helpers like the liver.
Right, the alimentary canal and accessory organs. He stresses its most vital purpose isn't digestion itself, but absorption of the nutrients after digestion. Digestion is just the preparation.
Breaking it down to absorb it.
Exactly. Yeah. And here's that surprising fact again. Digestion technically happens outside the body.
Right, because the inside of that tube, the lumen, is continuous with the outside world.
Precisely. Food only truly enters your body when it passes through the lining of the small intestine into your bloodstream or lymph. It's the same idea for the air inside your lungs or the urine inside your bladder, technically still outside.
That really messes with your perception of inside and outside. Okay, number 10, urinary system.
Kidneys, ureters, bladder, urethra. The kidneys are constantly filtering your blood plasma to produce urine. Urine, he says, is essentially filtered blood. The whole system exists primarily for the blood's sake, to maintain the blood's proper composition, volume, pressure, pH. Keeping the blood right keeps everything else stable.
Right. Homeostasis again. And finally, number 11, reproductive system.
Unique in a couple of ways. One, obviously there are 2 different versions, male and female, unlike the other systems, which are basically the same in everyone. And 2, its primary purpose making babies is not essential for the individual's survival. All the other 10 systems perform functions you absolutely cannot live without day to day. Reproduction is for the survival of the species, not the self.
That's a profound difference. What a fantastic tour. It really highlights the interconnectedness, but also the specific roles. And it makes you rethink things like that outside the body concept.
Definitely.
Dr. Hoffman also really emphasizes the need for precise language in anatomy, starting with the anatomical position. Mm. Why is that so important?
It's about having a standard reference point. The anatomical position, standing straight, feet slightly apart, palms facing forward, is the universal baseline. So when we use directional terms like superior or anterior, everyone knows exactly what they mean, no matter if the body is lying down or standing on its head. It prevents confusion.
Okay, so it's the map key, essentially.
Exactly.
And then he introduces the names for all the different superficial body regions. It feels a bit like learning a new language at first.
It can seem like a lot of terms, yeah. But it's about precision. For example, what most people call their arm is anatomically just the brachium, the part from your shoulder to your elbow.
Ah, right. And the forearm is the antebrachium.
Correct. Your wrist area is the carpus, which is part of the manus, the hand. Your fingers are digital. Knowing these terms allows for clear communication, especially in medicine.
Same for the lower limb. The leg isn't the whole thing.
Nope. The leg is technically only from the knee down to the ankle, the crural region. The thigh is the femoral region. The ankle is the tarsus, part of the pes, or foot. Toes are also digital.
Okay, so brachium femoral up top, antebrachium crural below. Got it.
And there are many others, cephalic for head, cervical for neck, thoracic for chest, abdominal, pelvic, gluteal for buttock. It's a detailed map.
And building on that map are the directional terms. These help describe where one thing is relative to another, right? Mostly pairs of opposites.
Exactly. Like superior towards the head or above versus inferior towards the feet or below.
Or anterior front versus posterior back. For humans, that's also ventral and dorsal.
Right. Then medial, closer to the body's midline versus lateral, yeah. Further from the midline.
Okay.
And for the limbs specifically, we use proximal, closer to the point where the limb attaches to the trunk versus distal, further from that attachment point.
So my elbow is proximal to my wrist, but distal to my shoulder.
Perfect. And there's also superficial, closer to the body surface, versus deep, further from the surface.
Lots of pairs, helps orient things. Then he talks about cutting the body, conceptually at least, the planes of dissection.
Yeah, imaginary flat surfaces cutting through the body. They're all at right angles, orthogonal to each other. There are three main ones.
Okay.
The sagittal plane divides the body into left and right parts. If it's exactly down the midline, it's called the median plane or mid-sagittal plane.
Left and right. Got it.
The frontal plane, also called the coronal plane, divides the body into anterior, front, and posterior back parts.
Front and back.
And the transverse plane, or horizontal plane, divides the body into superior, upper, and inferior lower parts, like cutting someone in half at the waist.
Upper and lower. Okay, those three planes give you a 3D grid.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Any other angled cut is just called oblique.
And these cuts help us understand the internal layout, including the major body cavities. Where are the main ones?
There are two main sets. The dorsal cavity is on the posterior side. It includes the cranial cavity, holding the brain, and the spinal cavity, or vertebral cavity, holding the spinal cord. They're continuous.
Brain and spinal cord protected in the back.
Right. Then there's the larger ventral cavity on the anterior side. This gets subdivided.
Yeah.
You have the thoracic cavity up top, protected by the ribs.
Chest cavity.
Inside that, there are actually two pleural cavities for the lungs, and sandwiched between them is the central mediastinum. That's where the heart sits, along with the trachea, the esophagus.
Okay. And below the diaphragm?
Below the diaphragm is the abdominal pelvic cavity, often just talked about together, but it includes the upper abdominal cavity, stomach, intestines, liver, etc., and the lower pelvic cavity. Bladder, some reproductive organs, rectum.
That covers a lot of the important ones.
It does.
And just quickly, for doctors and nurses, he mentioned ways to subdivide that abdomen, like quadrants.
Yeah, very practical. You can divide the abdominal pelvic area into four quadrants. Right upper, right lower, left lower. Always based on the patient's right and left, not yours.
Good point.
Or for more detail, there's a 9-region scheme, like a tic-tac-toe grid, with names like umbilical region, around the navel, epigastric just above it, hypogastric below it, and so on. Helps pinpoint pain or problems.
Very systematic. So we've covered structure, functions, systems, navigation. What does this all build towards? Dr. Hoffman brings it all back to a crucial life-sustaining concept, homeostasis. What exactly is that, and why is it so fundamental?
Homeostasis is, well, it's kind of the whole point of all these systems working together. He defines it as the maintenance of a relatively stable internal environment in an organism, keeping things inside you, temperature, blood sugar, pH, water balance within the narrow limits that allow life to continue.
Stable internal condition.
Relatively stable, yes. Yep. Within tolerable limits. He breaks it down using terms like a variable, the thing being controlled, like temperature, a set point, the target value for that variable, and an error, the difference between the actual value and the set point.
Okay, so the body is constantly measuring these variables and trying to minimize the error.
Exactly. Because if any of these variables drift too far outside those tolerable limits for too long, Well, the organism can't survive. It's absolutely critical.
And Dr. Hoffman explains there are two main ways the body tries to correct these errors, two types of feedback mechanisms.
That's right. Two main categories.
And which one is the key player in maintaining homeostasis?
Overwhelmingly, it's negative feedback. The name tells you what it does. It negates or reduces the error. It pushes the variable back towards the set point.
Ah, negative means reducing the difference.
Precisely. So if your body temperature goes up, that's the error. Negative feedback triggers sweating to cool you down, bringing the temperature back towards the set point. If your temperature drops too low, negative feedback triggers shivering to generate heat, bringing it back up.
So it always opposes the change.
Yes. It's stabilizing. It's how homeostasis is achieved and maintained almost constantly. Think of your house thermostat. It uses negative feedback.
Makes sense. But there's also positive feedback. How is that different? And why isn't it used for stability?
Right. Positive feedback is the complete opposite. Instead of negating the error, it amplifies it. It pushes the variable further away from the set point.
Further away? That sounds dangerous.
It can be. That's why Dr. Hoffman stresses positive feedback never leads to homeostasis. It's inherently destabilizing. It has to be temporary, part of a specific process that has a definite endpoint, and then negative feedback has to take over again to restore balance.
Okay, so it's used for specific short-term jobs. What's his example?
The classic example he uses is parturition, which is just the fancy word for childbirth.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, early uterine contractions start to stretch the cervix, the opening of the uterus. This stretching sends signals to the brain. The brain responds by releasing the hormone oxytocin.
Okay.
Oxytocin travels through the blood back to the uterus and causes stronger contractions. These stronger contractions stretch the cervix more. More stretching leads to more oxytocin release, which leads to even stronger contractions.
Ah, it's a reinforcing cycle. Each step makes the next step bigger.
Exactly. It amplifies the process, driving it forward rapidly until the end point the baby being born is reached. Then the stretching stops, the oxytocin release stops, and the positive feedback loop is broken. Negative feedback mechanisms then help the body return to its non-pregnant state.
Wow, that's a powerful but temporary mechanism, completely different from the constant adjustments of negative feedback.
Totally different roles.
Yeah.
Negative feedback maintains stability. Positive feedback drives rapid change to completion.
What an absolutely incredible deep dive into the human blueprint. Seriously, thank you for walking us through Dr. Hoffman's insights. We've gone from, you know, the tiniest cell and its chemistry all the way up to complex organ systems and even the precise language needed to map it all out.
It's fascinating stuff.
It really is. And we really appreciate you, the listener, joining us for this exploration today.
And maybe as you go about your day now, just take a moment to consider the sheer marvel of it all. What Dr. Hoffman illuminates is this incredible biological organization. Think about those quadrillions of chemical reactions, the trillions of specialized cells, the 11 intricate systems, all with their emergent properties, all working together, constantly adjusting, constantly striving for that stable internal balance homeostasis.
Yeah.
What does that incredible dynamic balance tell us about the resilience, the adaptability of life itself? Maybe just notice the anatomical wonders in your own simple movements, or even just in taking your next breath. It really is quite astonishing when you stop and think about it.